Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
My darlings, we are burning down the house. Lordy, lordy. Here on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Get some shelter. Lordy, lordy, give me some shelter. Heady times. Lots cooking. This week I want to talk with you about heritage, modernism, especially Orthodox modernism, context, materiality, and some movements afoot in architecture and the world of architectural education. As a follow-up to our conversation of last week with Dr. Professor Wilfred Wang, in which we talked about quality and we talked about modernism, let's go back and pick up some of the points that Wilfred quite rightly brought to our attention about modernism. Now, Orthodox modernism, as he points out, which I neglected to think about myself for a while, Orthodox modernism is, and these are not his words, but rather my observations, a bit infantile. In the 20th century, modernism, and the late 19th century, modernism meant throwing out context, heritage, tradition, the form, and to a certain degree the context, and to a greater degree the thinking that had informed the creation of the built environment up until that time. And so from that we had the Wiener Werkstätte, the Viennese work studio, which was part of the Vienna Secession, which was an artistic and philosophical movement that said that we are seceding from the status quo. We're just going to do our own thing. And Wilfred found that to be overly rejecting of context and tradition, and therefore, I interpolate, destructive of a continuity of thought. In terms of the modernism that we architects have been taught or have learned about, and perhaps we weren't taught, but we learned about it anyway, the modernism of Corbeau and of Mies, by way of the Bauhaus, and therefore by way of Gropius also, is a notion that every form, every formalistic response to a requirement to build must be rejected, and that all old forms were, it depends on who was saying it, bourgeois, unimportant, outmoded, worthy of being discarded. And what Wilfred was suggesting in his new theory of architecture is to let the morphology, that is to say, the shape making, follow the typology, that is to say, the program, differentiated by the needs of the program, the type of programmatic requirements. Let formology follow typology, or morphology follow typology, which gets back to Horatio Greenough's maxim, often mistakenly applied or attributed to Louis Sullivan, that form follows function evermore, that comes back to be useful, just as useful as Vitruvius's dictum that architecture should have commodity firmness and delight. Now, those of you who are listening, I encourage you to call in. The first time I probably made this call out. Call in 718-497-2128. I'd like to talk about modernism, and I'd like to engage you, whoever is listening here live. I know that thousands and thousands of you listen to our podcast, but right now on February 12th, Sunday afternoon at 25 to 5, please call in. Jack will put you through. I want to talk about modernism. I want to talk about morphology and typology. But before we take our first break, I want to set up a parallel of thought. Two things are much on my mind these days. The first is this battle to balance a warm or humanistic approach to creating space based on modernist precepts of material, modern material, glass, steel, aluminum, masonry, but applied in a certain sort of way, not masonry as a bearing structure. That sort of warm and humanistic modernism, which embraces context and wishes to carry forward what we've learned over the last 100 years of modernism, and the other train of thought that I want to examine in our second half is the threatened reinvention of our beloved alma mater. I mean the late Cooper Union. And I say the late Cooper Union because it has become abundantly clear that the president, the new president, Jamshed Baruka, and the trustees of Cooper Union intend to reinvent 150 years of tradition, especially reinvent 110 years of free Cooper Union, that is, the paradigm of a free education based on meritocracy, not based on your ability to pay, but based solely on your ability to be judged worthy of admittance. And in that reinvention, I see modernism at work, because if we look at Orthodox modernism in its infantilism, it says that all that has come before, all heritage, and this is, after all, Heritage Radio Network, and without a keen awareness of heritages that might be lost, starting with Patrick Martins and his deep immersion in the slow food movement. Without Heritage Foods USA, there would be no Heritage Radio Network. Without an understanding of the human patrimony, or matrimony, if you wish to be equal about it, the legacy, the human legacy of heritage, we would not be here speaking with you. And so let me throw that forward a few different paths to where we get to the late Cooper Union and the notion of reinventing an august institution based on meritocracy in the way of modernism, to say that all that has come before needs be discarded. Let's just make something new. Let us not carry forward any of the heritage or context or the materiality, the reality made real in making a place for people to come without obligation of paying, but only with an obligation to think and to study and to create, to reinvent. That institution is very modern, and it is so much a piece of what we struggle with in architecture. To reclaim our heritage, which has been discarded through Orthodox modernism, and may we hope that the late Cooper Union does not become the late Cooper Union, but rather discovers its heritage and carries it forward with vigor. Because everything counts in large amounts. Could we have a little break? We'll be right back. That was written and performed in the 1980s, a previous period of economic excess, but it has so much reverberation with the experience of the current pre-crash economy of excess, which in terms of architecture, we're talking architecture now, and if you'd like to call in and talk about architecture over the last several years, 718-497-2128. I'll engage you in conversation. What Wilfred Wang, and we were talking previously about some of the points that he made in last week's conversation about the failure of the role of the owner. Because when there's a project, there's an owner, there's a community, and there's the architect, and there's the builder. It's not a holy trinity, it's closer to a quadrangle, or perhaps a quincunx. You know, there's four points and something in the middle. The thing in the middle is the building. There's the owner of the community, the architect, and the builder. I like that image. And together, they form stability through the triangulation that crosses in the center, that quincunx, that central point. That is the product in the built environment. And we have seen a lot of formalistic or morphological excesses because the ownership just was wowed. Oh, they're going to make money one way or the other, and they just let the architects do whatever they wanted. Parallel with that was the rise of computer-aided design, which led to such excesses as the work of Frank Gehry, although he started in the analog world with simply making models of buildings that looked like a dying trout. Well, those of you who are foodies know that there is a special French dish called blue trout, or truite au bleu, in which they take a live trout and they fry it live, and it curls up in passion throes of death. And it turns blue. It's apparently a great delicacy. It sounds rather barbaric, but I am told by M.F.K. Fisher, who's written about having been served a truite au bleu in her writings, that it is a very delectable dish. And you don't have to take it from me. You can go and look at what Gehry has said. Frank Gehry is much taken with the forms of fish, and he's made buildings that look like fish, and he had then to invent Gehry Technologies, and they bought out the software company that produced CATIA, K-A-T-I-A, which is a CAD, computer-aided design, to CAM, computer-aided manufacturing software, which previously was used in the automotive industry, in order to produce the panels for his contorted fish-like buildings. And then we get to Zaha Hadid with her impossible structures that were only in any way feasible because of computer-aided design, but do not necessarily, to use John Haddock's screed of what is architecture or not, do not necessarily engage the spirit. But they do certainly speak as testimonials to the ego of the architect, which Dr. Wang finds to be a failure. So say I as well. But this modernistic urge to throw out heritage, throw out relationship to gravity. You know, the orthogonal structure came out of a wish to stand up straight in one space And so we made our orthogonal through millennia, orthogonal structure, that is to say 90 degrees connections in structure, because we like to stand up straight in our rooms. We didn't really want to have to crouch over as one would in an igloo. Not that there's anything wrong with an igloo, but that, you know, that's fine in an Arctic area, but or the thatched hut of European and antiquity of the Iron Age. You know, we had curved structures. We had the longhouse in Norse architecture, which had an orthogonal structure, but then with rammed earth walls on either side, but not very commodious, and therefore not up to the level set for us by Vitruvius. And because we are a Greco-Romano civilization here in the West, we do pay attention to these precepts put out for us by the Romans. Our law comes from the Romans here in the West. And we must be aware that that is our heritage. But when we throw out the heritage of orthogonality and say, well, we can do whatever we like because simply we can, well, that's infantile. That's disrespecting our ancestors. It is discarding our heritage. It is discarding our context. It is discarding, and this is a piece of context, the materiality of everything that has come before. It's to say that we would lay waste to the landscape and populate it with little onanistic, self-expressionistic, monumental pieces of would-be architecture. Can you imagine for a moment what New York would be like if every corner had something as unusual and self-referential as the Guggenheim Museum? Now, Frank Lloyd Wright knew that he could do that because he was breaking the grid. Well, actually, he wanted to break the grid so much that he really wanted the Guggenheim Museum to be a pavilion in Central Park. But the city wouldn't go for it. And so he lobbied to have it on the east side of Fifth Avenue, where it is today. And it definitely breaks the grid with its Dairy Queen inverted snow cone. I'm not saying that it's bad, but I am saying that if that was the pattern for the rest of New York, what we find pleasant being in this city would be gone. It would be rather jarring if on every corner there was some folly. I mean, it would be a fun house. And I was just remarking on the fact, for me it's a fact anyway, that the reason that homeless people in New York and tourists alike or a little bit psychotic is because they are incessantly, without any respite, exposed to the clamor and the noise of the street. Those of us who live here, we go out and we do what we need to do, and then we go back to the shelter of our home, of our apartment, of our house, to reconnect with ourselves. If every corner had a folly like Frank Lloyd Wright's extremely modern Guggenheim Museum, it would be a madhouse and we'd be all psychotic. But I digress. What I wanted to talk about was quality. Quality meaning that we recapture heritage. We step around the issues of Orthodox modernism and we reconnect with heritage, with tradition, with context, and with the materiality of the real world. And I'm afraid for my alma mater, Jack, a little break is coming up very soon, that this reinvention of the Cooper Union might be the death knell for it. Let's have a little musical break. around the house. That was, of course, Dies Irae, fifth movement of Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique. It sets the right tone for how I feel about my alma mater, which is caught in the throes of Orthodox modernism, in which the trustees and the new president have determined they need to reinvent our 150-year-old institution. What does that mean? That means that, for one, they think that they will charge tuition. How does that then differentiate the Cooper Union from Princeton, Cornell, Harvard, Yale, colleges that offer grants to students who can gain admittance, but not so much for those who can afford to go there? So, out with the heritage. 100 years ago, 110 years ago, Abram S. Hewitt, who knew Peter Cooper, the founder of Cooper Union, got together with other men of means in New York City, and they raised an endowment, finally making it possible for Peter Cooper's wish that education should be as free as air and as free as water, should be finally made real at the Cooper Union for the advancement of science and art on Cooper Square, 7th Street and 3rd Avenue in New York City. They did so. They remitted their contributions to the mayor of the city of New York, who gladly then bestowed it upon the institution. And so, let me say that the Cooper Union has a deep and long 110-year history, going back to 1902, with the city of New York, an unspoken but yet explicit deed of trust that the Cooper Union shall give education as free as air, as water, to those willing to show that they are ready to carry forward the legacy of the school. And that legacy, that heritage, that materiality is, and this is something that I think that the trustees do not understand, and which I think that the new president is struggling to understand, is a commitment to truth, transparency, and moving the world forward. The reason that I do what I do here on Burning Down the House on the Heritage Radio Network is because I was inculcated with this spirit of raising the level of discourse. And that's what we do here at Heritage Radio Network. We, bit by bit, attempt to raise the level of discourse about how we live, where we live, and why we are doing what we do to make the world a better place for all of us. Not just those of us in the studio, not just people here in Brooklyn, not just people in the five boroughs, not just people in the Northeast, not just people on the East Coast or the West Coast. Everyone, everywhere, all over the planet, raising the level of discourse. That is a materiality. That is a material fact. It is a proven fact. We will not be denied here on Heritage Radio Network. We will not shut up, and I will not shut up. As a loyal alumnus of the Cooper Union, about heritage and the materiality, the reality, the flesh and blood vigor of people who have been through the experience of the 110-year, albeit experiment, in an education that is free of this infantile notion of modernism, that we need to reinvent something that isn't broken. And that's the problem with architectural modernism also. There was so much that was not broken. Yes, yes, yes. after World War I, which was hugely disruptive to Western culture. I can't speak about Middle Eastern culture or Eastern culture. I can only speak to the West. That's what I know best. Things were different after the First World War, after civilized nations attacked each other with chemical weapons, after aerial warfare became real, after mechanized warfare, panzers and tanks became real, after a wide-scale use of mechanized rifles, I mean the machine gun, the Maxwell gun, the Browning automatic rifle, after all of these horrors were made real, everything was up for grabs. For sure. But architecture is not simply materiality, it is also thought. It is also culture. People still got up in the morning, and they still washed their faces, and they still fell in love, and they still wanted a clean and quiet place, just as we do here in the city, a respite. And it was not necessary to throw out all of the morphologies of what has come before, and it is not necessary to throw out the morphology. Let's talk about the social morphology of Cooper Union. The social morphology of Cooper Union is that it is a place where you have to compete with other people of your cohort, shall we say. It's a medical term. People with the same disease, a disease to want to explore, a disease that says I want to create, a disease that says I want to learn, and I don't want to have to worry about can I pay for it. Just let me do it. That's the social morphology of Cooper Union. And to a certain degree, that is the social morphology of people who want to study architecture. In previous programs, we've talked about the increasing burden of the cost of a collegiate or post-collegiate education. Well, Cooper Union offers a collegiate education in engineering, art, and architecture, free of the worry, can I pay for it after I have learned what I need to learn to start contributing back to society? And so reinvention, I think, and so do those of my brothers and sisters in the Free Cooper Union movement, think that reinvention is really an infantile reaction, that everything is just caca. I'm just going to play with my own shit as long as I want to, because I'm a brand new infant and I will just reinvent the world on my own terms until mommy or daddy or reality or the weather or gravity somehow interfere. And similarly, we saw the same urges in the pre-crash excesses of computer-driven forms that could only have been made possible because there was a rather infantile urge of, I'm going to do it because I can, because there is no mommy, daddy, gravity, air, wind. You see my point, my friends. In the world, we're facing a crisis of faith. Do we continue to throw out what has come before and just keep doing our own infantile thing? Or do we get real? Do we start saying, oh my God, we've almost lost our heritage. Our legacy is nearly gone. Heritage Radio is founded on the notion that we must recapture our heritage. Burning Down the House is founded on the notion that we must raise the level of discourse enough to realize that we are on the brink of losing our heritage, and that we need to get real, and we need to look at the materiality, the reality, the essence of thought and passion and belief. Jack, I think I've said my piece. Let's go out with some happy music from some boys from Brooklyn. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. This has been Burning Down the House for the 12th of February. Valentine's Day is coming up. Fall in love. Stay in love. Be in love. Keep the faith. Thank you for listening.
Find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.